Welcome to another episode of Inside York Tech, a podcast featuring students, staff, and alumni of the York County School of Technology.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Inside York Tech. I'm your host, Nick Staub. Today, we're going to be highlighting two people associated with our architecture and construction management program, Mr. Don Bryant and Mr. Lee King. We'll first be speaking with Mr. King, who is a 2008 graduate of York Tech's Architecture and Construction Management program, which, at the time, was called Architecture and Drafting Design. He is now working for Bus Climate Control as the Director of Brand Strategy and Customer Experience. He's also managing his own very successful recording studio here in York. His work has been heard by millions across the globe, whether they realize it or not, because his studio has recorded the voice used in one well-known company's line of personal assistant products, which are in countless homes in the United States and abroad. So without further ado, Lee, thank you for joining the show today. How are you?
I'm great, Nick. Thanks.
It's hard to tease your involvement with a global company without discussing it first. So can you tell us more about your recording studio and that voice recording work that I mentioned?
Yeah, sure. So in 2014, I had the idea to, you know, open up a recording studio. It was actually thought of before then, but at this point I was getting pretty serious with it, and I had a lot of clients that were local artists at the time. So we've been working since 2014 with local artists, and we started to branch out into commercial work as well. Last year, I had a really big company reach out to us from Europe, and they're just like, "Hey, can we work with you?" And I'm like, "Sure, can you work with me?" So we brought them in, and they toured the studio. Went through 3 months of onboarding with them and making sure we were the right fit for them, and ended up recording a local vocal artist here in York. So 3 month project with them, it was just unimaginable that we would get that kind of, you know, work with a big name. I wish I could talk about who it is, but they have us under NDA, so I can't really say their name just for security purposes. But now we are actually a certified vendor or an approved vendor for them. So anytime they have work in this area, this region, they're going to be coming back to our studio.
So I'm not surprised to hear that a major company would have a long vetting process, but 3 months seems extreme. That had to be pretty nerve-wracking to host this size company and trying to prove to them over the course of 3 months that you're the right fit. Talk to me about how that went down.
Yeah, so really the initial process was a lot of paperwork, a lot of documentation, you know, having our lawyer review the contracts and what they were agreeing to pay us, really negotiating those prices as well. A lot of projects they've done with other studios were a lot less than what, you know, we were asking for, and had to let them know, hey, this is, you know, you guys came to us and you want to, you know, stop all of our productions, come in and, you know, control our studio for 3 months. It's, you know, it's going to be this price. And that was one of the hardest parts for me, was, you know, negotiating with a company that large and, you know, really, you know, working with them on that side. But, you know, our contact there was great. She worked with us, worked through all the issues that, you know, came up with scheduling and whatnot. And it was just, it seemed seamless, really. And then, you know, I checked in, I had an engineer working, to do most of the work at the studio, checked in, you know, every couple hours as soon as they started to make sure everything's flowing the way it should be, make sure that, you know, they're getting what they want. Obviously from their end, they had maybe 7 people from all over the world joining in, virtually, vocal coaches and, you know, script writers and creative assistants and directors and whatnot. So everything was being monitored in real time from their end and printing right to their servers, essentially. So
we're talking about a voice assistant who has to understand probably millions of prompts and respond with probably an equal number of answers. Did they provide you with all the different phrases that had to be recorded? How does that look? How do you even start a gigantic undertaking like that?
Yeah, so their process was pretty sophisticated, of course, and what they had was a digital platform that the artist could take with them into the recording booth, and they could see each phrase, and they would just do one phrase at a time, And as they were saying it into the microphone, it would highlight the words almost like karaoke, right? And when they were done, the engineer over the phone said pretty much, hey, this is good, or this is, you know, say it like this or say it differently, right? So that times, you know, 100,000.
Would you say this project was more difficult? Because in my mind, if you're recording a local artist, there's not as many hands in the pot.
Yeah.
So does this make it more difficult to have that many different voices and opinions in the same room?
You know, that's an interesting question, because I would say that sometimes the creativity of local artists is the most difficult thing to work with, right? Companies like this, they have a really strict game plan. The talent was as professional as they could be. They are well rehearsed, and they had a prompt. So it really wasn't on me to make sure that the talent performed as well as they should. It was really on their side to do that. So when a recording artist comes into the studio and they want to record a song, a lot of times we are the only ones there with them, and we have to help them creatively and be bold enough to tell them, hey, this doesn't sound great. Let's retrack that.
So a lot more pressure is on your shoulders when you're with an individual artist as opposed to working with a large corporation.
Yeah, figuratively. I mean, right. For somebody that owns the recording studio, I definitely felt more pressure during a larger company being there. But for the engineer that's running the session, I would say after the first few sessions, it's probably not that bad.
What are some of the other projects that you're working on, and what are some of your goals that you have for the studio?
So the main goal, so my business partner, Kendall Harris, and I started, you know, like I said, back in 2014, main goal was to make an impact. It wasn't even necessarily at first just to record. We wanted to teach kids, you know, the fundamentals. We wanted to make an impact in the community. We tried to do that in Philadelphia, where I was working and he was also working at the time. Just couldn't, you know, pull together the finances to make that happen. So starting up here in York, you know, the goal is to make an impact. So we started with a different kind of business approach than just a regular recording studio. So we had obviously recording, mixing, and mastering services for artists that were local. At the time I had 30 or so artists that I was working with. But then we also included classes, right? Classes for people that wanted to learn how to make music. And then also, classes for people that wanted to learn instruments. So through that process over the years, we've learned how to write grants, work with, you know, various nonprofit organizations to partner with them to get these grants. And so now there's a plethora of services that we offer, right? From, again, the audio production services to classes, residencies, mentorships, and internships, all the way to music therapy, sound recording, you know, for therapy as well. Just a lot of various services. Also recently we've worked on a lot of acoustic paneling. So acoustic paneling for Yorktown Hotel, for example, or you know, Collusion Tap Works and Bravino, right? These places that have a lot of people eating and, you know, socializing. You never really think that, hey, there's an acoustic element to that. So we've done work in that space as well. So we're really all about making an impact, and over the years we've done that with over 850 artists in the studio. We've done that with over 200 individuals impacted from our music therapy programs.
Well, it's amazing how humble you are despite the success, because we weren't able to tease out this whole recording studio success until probably toward the latter end of our pre-interview conversation over the phone. So it's almost like this success is behind you and you're on to the next thing. We mentioned you're currently at Bus Climate Control. Can you tell us what you're doing now on that side of things, and also some of the other jobs you've had?
Yeah, so I can start back just when I was going to school here, right? I had an internship from here for Marketex Exhibit Design. So I started just designing exhibits for trade shows and museums. So got some exposure there that was pretty cool, learning how to use the CAD systems that I was trained on to, you know, make 3D models and drawings and whatnot for exhibits. Went to college at Thaddeus Stevens and got an internship at Tate Towers, which was Tate Towers back then. Now it's Rocklitz, right? So designed, you know, a lot of different pieces of concert stages, you know, from the U2 concert stage in 2009, which was the largest touring stage in the world at the time, right? To Jonas Brothers, the Michael Jackson This Is It tour, to the 2009 VMAs, right? So just small little parts like video walls and stage decks and things like that. So use my skills there with CAD to sort of, you know, to do that work, and then to strengthen my skills as well. From there, I actually started going towards more of the engineering, like the mechanical engineering side, with ES3. So I worked there and did robotics and sort of automation, and realized that wasn't really what I wanted to do necessarily, but I thought the industry and warehousing was interesting. So sort of stayed in that vein a little bit, and went to International Logistics Systems there, you know, working with government contracts, still sort of warehouse kind of design and things like that, but it was more government side, so Navy and Army contracts, which were really cool. Got to travel a lot, got to experience, you know, the consultant side of things and the training side of things a little bit, which led me to where I'm at now, Bus Climate Control. So I started there in design as a mechanical designer. They had an opportunity to hire a project manager. It was the first one for the company to oversee engineering projects. So I went back to Drexel to get trained up, get my PMP certificate, you know, and try that. They hired me, luckily. And then I was able to go from there to be now the brand strategy and customer experience director. See, the link there was I wore so many hats, you know, in the project management role. I ended up overseeing the move of all of our facilities and consolidation of our facilities in the U.S. to one new facility in York. So because I had my hand in every department at that point, you know, rewriting processes, you know, helping HR to train and hire people. I mean, there's a plethora of hats that I was wearing. This position sort of was a need in the company, and I just stepped in to fill it.
So the easier question for you to answer may have been, what have you not done? Because it sounds like you've had your hands in just about everything, especially in the architecture world, which I actually want to go farther back.
Yeah.
So let's go back to junior high Lee King, who's still trying to decide what he wants to do with his life. How does architecture and, at that time, drafting design, how does that even get on your radar as like a 6th, 7th, 8th grader? And then how did you make that decision to come to York Tech?
Well, you know, it started with, I went to Northeastern. I was in Northeastern Middle School, and I was at lunch, and, you know, some representatives from York Tech came in, gave a little presentation. I was like, that sounds cool, right? Well, so you can go to a school where half the time you're learning, you know, a trade, and half the time you're, you know, doing your gen eds. And I was like, that sounds like something I would be interested in. So I got a little bit more information about it, and I came to an open house, and I just was like, wow, there is so many career options here. And I just want to, you know, I want to be successful one day. So I want to get a jump start on it, right? I never had the plan to come here and then not go to college afterwards. I ended up going to a tech school after this as well. But that, you know, to me, was even a better option. But, you know, I started looking into what I really wanted to do here at Tech. And, you know, I was convinced I'm gonna make the leap, right? And I realized that, you know, throughout my life, there's one constant thing that I like to do, and that was play with Legos when I was a kid, right? I like to build stuff. So honestly, when I was going here, the mechanical side wasn't very big yet, or wasn't very strong yet, from what I can remember. I would have probably chosen that path. But I thought architecture, Legos, you know, building stuff, that all seems sort of like the same, right? So I came here and I met Mr. Bryant, showed me around the classroom, and I was like, this is what I want to do, all right? This is really cool. I love the 3D modeling. Well, it was actually just 2D at the time, but I had seen 3D modeling, and I'm like, I want to do that. So, I mean, it was a hard choice, you know, leaving my friends in middle school and going to a whole nother school district. You know, it would have been really hard without, you know, some of the support from my parents, you know, the school here, and then showing us what it really is, what you can learn here. So it was a huge leap of faith.
So that ninth grade year, especially early on, new school, creating new friendships, attending a completely new program to you. Mm-hmm. When does that moment occur where you decide, yeah, this is for me, I belong here, and I want to pursue this as a career?
I would say that it happens slowly over time. I mean, when I came here, I was sort of in awe, right? There's so much to learn, so many new things I've never seen. So I was like, this is really cool. But just in general, I like, you know, business. I like careers and understanding what careers are out there. So I never really had a tangible moment that was like, hey, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I actually still don't think I've ever had that tangible moment, right? I still...
Always evolving, right?
I'm always evolving, right? So, but the you know, instructor, Mr. Bryant, you know, he really was one of the key reasons why I stuck it out into this industry, right? In this industry. I really think that, you know, the way he taught was, you know, like no other teacher I had before. He really showed us that, you know, there is value in working hard, you know, getting it done. And that sort of went with me throughout my life. When I was in college, when I was at Thaddeus Stevens, I had projects, and I noticed that other kids from other schools just didn't try as hard, right? They got some of the work done, but when it came down to it, I was the one sleeping overnight in the lab to get the final done, right? With a couple other people. And I think really I owe that to Mr. Bryant and what he taught us here at Tech.
So anytime I visit Mr. Bryant's classroom, it seems like the projects get more and more intricate. And obviously the focus required from a student increases in order for them to complete that project. Obviously, Mr. Bryant's critically involved because he's kind of pushing them along the way to help them realize their full potential. Did you experience that same thing with Mr. Bryant? Was he the one kind of pushing you and helping create that motivation as you went through the program?
Yeah, I mean, he was sort of a different kind of teacher in my mind because, you know, he sort of told us it's up to us, right, to succeed or to not, right? Obviously, he coached us and helped us along the way, but it sort of was, you know, he gave us ownership and responsibility over things. And that was my first time really seeing that. So with a teacher, right? Usually teachers are like, okay, here's the work, get it done, get it done, get it done. But he was more like, here's the work, you know, figure it out, you know, and I'm here if you have any questions, right? But it allows some autonomy and some creativity.
Is there a project that stands out as being your favorite from your time here?
I have a lot, a lot of projects from my time here. But there was a few that, you know, we did with National Association of Home Builders. So I was actually the president of the chapter while I was here. And there was just, you know, a huge project every year for that. And it was a problem that would come from NAHB. And we'd have to design, you know, a house and do the floor plans and all that stuff based on, you know, the problem that they presented. So to me, that was like, you know, we had that going on top of our regular schoolwork, you know, and it was just always there and always something we had to make sure we got done because we were responsible to present it, you know, in Florida and step up in front of hundreds of people to do that, right? So we can't just not do the work.
Yeah, and the fact that that's a national competition, mm-hmm. Where you're competing against other students who are just as proficient. Can you tell me more about that competitive side of things with NAHB?
Yeah, and NAHB as well as skills, right? I was in both of them, and what I learned from those programs are that, you know, we were taught how to view architecture in the classroom, but we never really had to put it to use, and that's the first time where there's other people saying, you know, you did good or you didn't do good on this part. Other than my, you know, my teacher, right? So it was really an eye-opening experience, you know, okay, well, this is how it really works. This is how you really do that. So it was a great experience, you know, on top of the work that we do in school.
One of the common acronyms that I hear every time I'm in Mr. Bryant's classroom or talking to anyone like yourself who's involved with architecture is CAD. And with as much as things change from a technology standpoint? It seems like CAD has remained that golden standard in the industry. And essentially, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's an architectural design software that allows you to put onto paper, really, what you're trying to eventually build. Can you tell me how vital that skill set has been since from the time you learned it at York Tech until now? It sounds like it's pretty much permeated almost every job you've had.
Yeah. So every position I've held, I've eventually used CAD somehow, right? And so when I was here, I was pushing the boundaries. That's what I do in every schooling or every position I've been in. I like to push the boundaries. So, you know, Mr. Brian's teaching us how to do 2D drawings and things like that. And I'm like, well, we could do it in 3D, you know? So, and, you know, the program back then, I think we were using 2011, it wasn't really made for 3D at all, but they had some features. So I ended up, you know, using it for walkthroughs and, you know, digital walkthroughs of the product or the houses that we were designing. So, you know, I love using CAD because everywhere I go, it applies, right? If you need to make a floor plan for a fire escape, you can use CAD. If you, you know, you really can use it for any role if you really want to.
One thing we haven't touched on yet is your success and visibility in the community. Mm. It seems like you've really always been involved in giving back, and certainly your involvement in several nonprofits in the area is an example of that. Can you tell us more about those nonprofits with which you're involved and some of the good they're doing in York?
Yeah, so I'm on the board of three nonprofits currently. One's sort of transferring to become part of the YMCA. So the Cultural Alliance was the first nonprofit I joined. It really started because I was trying to write grants, and I applied to the Cultural Alliance for some grants, and they shot me down. And I said, okay, well, that's why aren't you accepting my grant? I thought it was the best one here, you know, that in my opinion. And they really mentored me and taught me how, you know, I should be writing these grants and what I should look for and how I should present it. So I ended up, you know, getting really involved in the grant making process, becoming part of some grant panels. And then eventually they saw value in adding me to their board. So from there, I started on the board at TechRev. So TechRev, part of the YMCA now, was building a brand new technology hub downtown, which was going to bring resources to communities in need, you know, technological resources, access to jobs and training and whatnot. So I thought that that was a huge initiative, you know, that could be hugely beneficial to the area. And just most recently, accepting a position on the board of Leadership York. So I'd gone through their Mentorship York program, and it was an awesome experience. I was paired up with my mentor, Dave Meckley. You know, he's like the godfather of York, right? He's really experienced in pretty much everything, right? And he's also an engineer, or has an engineering background. So it was just a really eye-opening program, and it taught me a lot, you know, to take my businesses to the next step, to take my professional career to the next step. So I figured, you know, what better way to give back to others in the area than to, you know, join that board of Leadership York. So I think that impact is important. It's not all about, you know, making money when you're working. It's about how you can give back and impact the community that you're from. So that's why I remain also involved here, you know, at Tech and the operational or occupational advisory committee. I do that also for HAC. I do it for York College, and I do that for Red Lion.
So with everything you've told us today, I honestly don't know how you sleep. How do you, I mean, you strike me as the type of person who constantly has a new or bigger goal on the horizon. You've got your professional career where you've continued to move up bigger and better things. You're now playing an integral role at Bus Climate Control. You've got your recording studio, which for most, for some studio recording studios, you've reached the pinnacle almost with the size contracts you've landed. And obviously your involvement in the community is exemplary. So what's next? What's driving you now?
again, the thing that always was driving me and continues to is impact, right? I just want to make as much impact as I can while I'm alive, right? So I will continue doing things that you know, involve positive impact to the community. And I always learn. I always continue to learn. So who knows, right? Whatever positions or opportunities come my way, I don't say yes to everything, but I try to, you know, have a fair amount on my plate at any given time. So we'll see.
Well, you're obviously a shining example of what most, if not all, of our York Tech alumni are after they graduate. And I really appreciate you being back here. Before you go, though, I just want to hear kind of in summary how York Tech has helped shaped your career and your path. Because a lot of the things that you learned here, it sounds like you're still applying in some way or another. Can you just kind of summarize what York Tech means to you?
Yeah, I mean, I was just speaking about this the other day to some of my colleagues at work, and I was saying that, you know, without York Tech, I really wouldn't be the person I am today. I wouldn't be where I'm at today. Again, the autonomy that was given in Mr. Bryan's class, it taught me a lot about responsibility, about, you know, about getting the job done. And I really use that in every single thing I do every single day. So, you know, without going here, I would have been a completely different person. I would not be really doing any of the things I am doing now. When I went here, you know, you learn a little bit of the entrepreneurial spirit, because a lot of the folks that go here graduate and start their own businesses and whatnot. And some of the, you know, instructors also had their own businesses. So again, I would not have learned that without going here. I wouldn't have the studio. I have a small design company as well. I wouldn't have that, you know, and I probably wouldn't have gotten as far as I am as I have in my company that I work for.
Well, you're certainly an inspiration, and I can't let you leave without putting in a shameless plug for another alumni-owned company. Can you tell us how people can find out more about your recording studio if they need those types of services?
Yeah, so you can find us at studio117york.com. Everything's really listed on there, from the recording, the music therapy, to the student classes that we have.
Well, Lee, thanks so much for joining us. It's been an absolute treat to talk with you, and I look forward to showing you around the school here in a few minutes.
All right. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And before you leave, we will take a short break, and then we will return to talk to Lee King's former instructor and our current architecture and construction management teacher, Mr. Don Bryant.
The York County School of Technology has been providing comprehensive technical education since 1969. Its state-of-the-art facilities house programs for both high school and adult learners. Visit our website at ytech.edu to find out if we might be a good fit for you. York Tech, fuel your future.
Okay, we're back with Mr. Don Bryant, the architecture and construction management teacher here at York Tech. The projects in which his students are involved never cease to amaze, and I know I've been in his classrooms a few times, and it seems like every time I go, the projects get more and more intricate. Mr. Bryant is also heavily involved in the activities available to students outside of the traditional school day. For instance, he currently serves as the head coach of our varsity softball team. Mr. Bryant, thanks so much for being here. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, we just had a chance to speak to Lee King, one of your former students who seems like an absolute rock star at a couple different jobs. I'd like to hear from you about what it's like to stay in touch with former students and hear about their successes.
Really, as a teacher, that's the kind of thing that keeps you going, knowing that you had an impact on a student and you watch the wonderful things that they do or the tremendous people that they become. Lee, for example, like you said, is his fingers in many different opportunities and many different ventures, and he's successful in all of them. And that speaks to his work ethic and how driven he is as an individual.
Well, during my time here, one thing that struck me is your passion and dedication for comprehensive technical education. I'm curious, what first attracted you to York Tech?
Well, I'm a big believer in technical education. For a long time, that was my background. I came right from industry, and if it wasn't for the opportunity that I had at Thaddeus Stevens to learn the architectural technology that they had there, I wouldn't be where I am today. And then to be able to take that continue my education and go further and then be able to pass that knowledge on to students has been a goal of mine, and I think it's worked out well over the years.
Can you tell us a little bit about what your role was in the industry?
Sure. When I got out of college, I started working for a rather large builder, and drafting, again, is a great gateway occupation. I started there as a draftsman there for numerous years, moved into the project management side of it, estimating, scheduling material takeoffs, those type of things. And as my program has expanded here, I've tried to incorporate some of that into the changing technology that we have here.
I mentioned in the intro that the name of your program has changed over the years. And I'm guessing that's likely an indication that the curriculum has adjusted with industry trends as well. Can you tell us a little bit about what your students currently learn in your class and how you've had to adjust over the years?
Yeah, when I first started teaching here, there was no architectural program whatsoever. I replaced the mechanical drafting teacher. So I did that for a couple of years, and then we moved on and split that program to mechanical drafting, and I created the architectural drafting program here. A lot of that was just your basic architectural CAD-related drawings. Now it's kind of morphed into construction management, where we do material takeoffs and we do estimating. Obviously, Revit has come onto the scene since then, so we're trying to become more versed in Revit and have my students learn that program as well, as that's the way the industry is moving forward. So it gives them a little bit of a broader aspect of things to do in the construction industry. And certainly with the NAHB, having a material takeoff and an estimating and a scheduling component, it's been something that my students have grown with over the years.
CAD and Revit are two names that pop up whenever I'm in your class. Can you explain what each of those is for and how the students use them?
Yeah, CAD is the grandfather of all of it. We use it for the basic CAD drawings, for the architectural drawings, for floor plans, elevations, and so forth. Revit, to me, has always been more of a presentation-type drawing. It'd be great for sales and those type of things.
So these are both computer software
right
elements that the students use almost on a daily basis, it sounds like.
Yeah, when we're not doing any of the type of hands-on projects, well, we'll do the balsa wood models, or we'll do 3D models or laser engraved models. Yeah, we're typically working on one of those two programs.
One thing that Lee mentioned during my conversations with him is that the skills he gained through the use of CAD here at York Tech have really translated into almost every job he's had since graduating. Is that one of the certifications students can earn in CAD? And if not, what are some of the certs they can use that then aid them in the industry once they graduate?
Well, we use CertiPort as a third-party certifying agency, and we can use, they have a Revit certification, they have an Autodesk or an AutoCAD certification that we have, so there's an ADDA certification.
Can you highlight one or two lessons that you look forward to each school year that kind of have that same creative field like the balsa wood project?
Yeah, I think more so than the balsa wood project, because everybody likes that, and then till it runs into like the third or fourth week, and then they get kind of tired of it. But some of the stuff that we do, the 3D modeling is really where it's at. So whether we do that in CAD or whether we do that in Revit and make use of our 3D printers, that seems to be something that the students enjoy. Today, I just finished up a Revit house with some of the younger students, and to be able to use the rendering component there, where they're able to go in and put in the furniture and use the render and make it look like a picture. And it gives them probably a little bit greater sense of satisfaction, especially at such a young age for the freshmen.
That's one project I haven't had the pleasure of seeing, the 3D printing in action. What are some of the things that students have come up with that they've designed and printed over the years?
Well, a lot of it is just, it's invaluable when we use it for their model homes. And what we've done in years past, where we've got a 4x8 sheet of plywood and we've divided into 8 equal sections, and each of the kids has designed a lot, and we've built a neighborhood when we've had the streets go through, and we've had the trees and landscaping done for the houses that they've created. And it lends itself to, again, problem-solving skills, and it's all about problem-solving skills. We'll talk about it. We'll look through the 3D model before it gets printed, and I'll ask a question like, okay, well, if you have the roof going this way, how are we going to be able to get the water out of the valleys? How are we going to be able to keep it everything away from the house so we don't have the damage that that can cause. So it's a great problem-solving tool. So you can see it before you actually build it.
That's another thing I wanted to discuss, because I've overheard some of the conversations that students have in your class. And it does really seem to be thinking logically about how to arrange the different components in a structure. I'll give you an example. I remember hearing two students talking about the placement of a bathroom. And one noted that, well, if you place it here, if the door opens outward, it's going to interfere with the hallway flow, right? So right. Can you tell me, how does that become intuitive? Like, how do they get to that point where they just have that knowledge? Is it just through the slow accumulation of skills in your class?
Definitely. The slow accumulation, and I think it's to the point where the students don't realize how much they've learned until the end. Or we don't do finals anymore, but I used to give finals every year. And when the kids got to the final, they'd be freaking out because it was all these pages. And then they realize, oh, wait, I know all this stuff. Because they don't realize how much they've learned over that time period, and just builds upon itself every year. So they have a great knowledge by the time they're done. They really do have a good foundation moving forward.
You mentioned that you attended Thaddeus Stevens.
Yes.
I know Lee King also attended Thaddeus Stevens. So that's certainly one avenue, the post-secondary education that sort of builds upon what you learn here at York Tech. What are some of the other potential job opportunities that you've had your students take on after graduating from high school?
Well, we've been very fortunate to have a great co-op program here at York County School of Technology. Certainly, Gigi Warner does a great job now, and before her, many other people were fantastic at it. I have two students out on co-op right now, and that's usually the gateway to get in to a company. And we've been, like I said, pretty fortunate. And NEHB is another way. We go out to, whether we were in Orlando or we were in Las Vegas, and had the judges come up afterwards and talk to us and talk to my students and say that because of the presentation that they have done, they've reconsidered hiring high school students. So it lets you know that they are fantastic at what they do at that level. When you get to the level of NEHB, is something that they can transition usually right from high school to working for somebody.
I think that's one component of York Tech that I didn't fully understand until I started working here. Not only are students acquiring those skills, but there are so many opportunities for them to create those relationships with potential employers. In fact, I've had teachers, and you mentioned Ms. Warner, talk to me about how potential employers are almost knocking down her door, right? They want access to our students as soon as possible. What would you suggest to a student who's looking at your program? Like, what are some of the things that they definitely need to be interested in order for this program to be effective for them? And what can they expect through those 4 years with you?
Well, through the 4 years, again, we can expect to build on everything that you started with. I've always said to people, I can teach you how to draw in a very limited amount of time. When I started teaching here, it was adult education, and the amount of money that the people, the adults, paid for 45 hours worth of AutoCAD was surprising to me. Well, these guys get 45 hours in a blink of an eye. So teaching them how to draw is very easy, and most of them pick that up very, very quickly. It's teaching them what to draw that requires the time. So we spend our time here focusing on what to draw, how things are built, how things go together. And again, it's wonderful to have a carpentry shop here that I can bounce things off of. It's wonderful to have an electrical and an HVAC shop here that we can talk about the mechanical systems. So it's all just builds upon itself. But I guess first-year students, it's learning the basics. Now, learning the basics of Revit, learning the basics of AutoCAD, learning some of the hands-on stuff with some of the balsa wood stuff that we do. But more than anything, I think you're looking at what the job really is. And it's a sedentary job, and we try to get up and move around as much as we can. But you have to be able to sit and work quietly. Well, not necessarily quiet, but you have to be able to sit and work independently for hours on end. And that's the job. That's the job in real life. And we try to mimic that here. Obviously, not necessarily quiet, and we have fun, and we talk about different things, and we have group projects and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's a sedentary job. So that's one of the major attributes that somebody has to have. They have to be able to sit and concentrate for an extended period of time.
Now, you mentioned, obviously, the work at the computer is huge. But you've also broken that up with other completely different projects that involve community aspects. Can you explain that a little bit? Because I know those are pretty cool and they have a direct benefit to the community.
Yeah, once the students turn 16, we try to schedule work dates with Habitat for Humanity. And those are things that are fantastic, where we physically get to go out and do whatever's needed out there. It could be anything from demolition to hanging drywall to painting. And those same things are invaluable. One, to give back to the community. And two, you can kind of see in real life what you're putting on paper or what you're drawing on the computer. And, you know, we've had a good working relationship with them. And quite honestly, I think before COVID, I think we have drawn the last 5 or 6 houses that Habitat Humanity has built, including some of the multifamily housing that they had built downtown. So we had a great working relationship with them. I think since COVID's happened, I think they might, and then they get kids from York College or YTI or two to do some of the drawings for them. But over the years, we've been able to do that. We do some community projects. We've had a House of Hope in Glen Rock there that, asked us to come down and do an as-built drawing for some of the stuff that they were getting ready to renovate. And anytime opportunities like that come up, we try to go out into the community and try to do those things.
That just, it's so wild to me in a positive way that students here at York Tech have their hands in so many buildings across York County.
You'd be surprised. I know we've done, when Mr. Hudak was here and all the projects that he got involved with, we did dugouts for probably a couple different schools. We did the dugout that, or not the dugout. We did the press box here at the school that turned out very well. We've done other buildings, Fraternal Order of Police. We've done a range building for them. We've tried to give back to the community that does so much for us.
Have you ever had or witnessed one of those light bulb moments from a student where they're so used to drawing that component on a computer, and then one of these hands-on projects, they have a chance to see it in person, and it just kind of clicks like, okay, now I understand what I've been looking at from a 2D perspective now that I see it in 3D.
Yeah, one of the first years here where we switched to architectural drafting, the student went out and worked as a framer helper over the summer. And he wasn't, an average student, a good student. He came back an excellent student because he understood now the things that we were talking about on the computer screen or on paper. How is this being framed? What's a bird's mouth? How are you holding this up? And having been able to see it and contribute to it in real life, made him a much better draftsman because he knew what he was drawing. And we can only try to duplicate that so much with the stuff that we see here, even when we go down to the arena or even when we talk about stuff that's being built. They're not the ones doing it, but being out there and being the one on the job site to do it will definitely make you better in the field.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, wasn't it your program that also took a field trip last year to look at some different architectural structures too, to visualize those in a different way?
Yeah, we went to Falling Water last year, which is Frank Lloyd Wright's house out close to the Pittsburgh area. We've been there a few times. We used to go to New York City just about every year, and we would hit different architectural structures up there that were just fantastic. I mean, obviously, world-famous buildings. So we would do that on field trips and try to get out and see and help understand. One of the things I always joke about my kids with is when we go to the top of the Empire State Building, I just said, I don't want you to say anything. I just want you to stand there and listen to the number of different languages that are spoken and understand that you are now living in a global economy as opposed to 30 years ago when there wasn't all the information technology and all the information sharing that we have today.
Well, I can't let you leave without asking about two more things. So first, can you give us a little insight into the upcoming softball season? What are your expectations for the team, and how do you think you're going to fare?
I think we'll be okay. We're going to have a winning record. We have had a winning record the last couple of years. So problem I see is we are going to lose so many seniors this year. I think I have 10 seniors. So replacing them next year, we're going to need some younger players and hopefully some incoming players to help step up. So that's going to be a challenge next year, but I think we'll be fine this year. Ava Steinfeld is such a tremendous young lady. She's going to go to Lebanon Valley College. She's a pitcher for us. And She's just wonderful on the mound, wonderful in real life. And we have had so many other people. I feel bad if I don't mention, but they are just fantastic young ladies.
Yeah, anyone who has the opportunity to see one of the games, I would certainly encourage you to do so. I remember the one thing that struck me last year during the game I was able to attend was just the positive energy and vibes that seemed to emanate from the dugout, regardless of the score or the outcome. That was certainly cool to see. The other thing I want to ask you about is an update on NAHB, because I know you are currently advising some of your students.
Yeah, I've gotten away from being the advisor of the program. That is now Mr. Sable. But I still tend to help advise my group. So when I say my group, NAHB now has broken off into two different sections. There's more of a construction component to it and more of an architectural component to it. So my students still do the architectural side of it, even though I don't go to the trips anymore or, you know, to Vegas and Orlando. I still have my hands in it with helping the kids. I truly believe this year might be our year again. We set some records a few years ago. We were the only team to ever win three in a row at one point. We were the only team to ever have two teams finish first and second, you know, those type of things. But I can see us getting back to that with the seniors we have now. Who went last year as the first time, and now this year after a year of experience, I expect great things from them.
And for context, NAHB holds a national contest each year, and I believe the architectural component this year is designing residential homes that will eventually be built in the Orlando area. Is that correct?
It's actually in Utah.
Utah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so Utah is the site for the house design that we are doing. And every year they change it up. We've done houses in Texas, Orlando, Maine. It's just different areas throughout the country, which in itself lends to be a challenge because, like, for example, the Texas one, post-tension concrete slab, not something we have a lot of experience with around here. So it is a lot of research. And I think people don't realize that the drafting is the fun part, but the book work and the research is still the thing we probably spend most time doing.
So that's an interesting point you just made, and hopefully I'm not oversimplifying this, but it sounds like you have to take into consideration the climate for which you're designing, which may dictate some of the materials that you use. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Foundations, frost depth, all that type of stuff, whether it's seismic area, is a seismic region. I know we did one year we had in Atlanta, and they had a specific requirement for soundproofing, because the fictitious job site was close to the airport. There's a lot of different things that you got to take into account. I know the one time we had a place that was backed up to a stream, so we had to take into account all the EPA regulations and water runoff and what we were going to do with the water. So those itself are above and beyond the normal curriculum, but it's also something that's invaluable for the students.
Well, Mr. Brown, I really appreciate you joining us today to give us some more insight into your program and your time here at York Tech. I'd like to remind everybody that if you're interested in learning more about the program and you're one of those prospective students, we do have an annual open house in November where you can come and talk to Mr. Brown in person, and we'll push out more information about that closer to September. So thank you again, Mr. Brown, for joining us, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Inside York Tech.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Inside York Tech. Catch all future episodes by visiting ysst.info/podcasts.